Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Pit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Join us on the Chinwag Podcast every Wednesday, where we trade the banal and the boring for the super strange and bizarre.
They committed human sacrifice?
I did bring up human sacrifice, yes.
You sure did.
That just went by fast.
Gotta casually toss that out.
I would like to have an alien, Hatchet Young, inside.
Holy shit, really?
She saw world peace, and I saw demons coming out of the wall.
I will say that there was a green couch outside of the principal's office, and you sat on it if you had lice or if you got in trouble.
They wake you up from the goo pods to live in reality, and you're naked and screaming. It's like...
Follow us for free on Apple Podcasts and all major podcast platforms.
For more information, go to chinwagpod.fm.
And find enlightenment through our Instagram or TikTok at ChinwagPod or on Twitter at Chinwag_pod.
How did this end up being one of the most problematic movies of the 90s?
Yeah, there's a lot of notes in here.
I was excited to do this podcast because I did like all the prep for everything but the movie notes before I watched the movie.
Uh-huh.
And just from that, I was like, man, I cannot wait to do this pod.
Yeah. This one was draining.
it felt like a long 87 minutes. Like, it's not a long movie, but it felt long. I don't know if you had the same experience, but this movie dragged.
It's hard. I can't remember because I watched it like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to try and relive the movie through my notes.
All right. Maze, you just watched it, right?
Yeah, I literally just finished like 15 minutes ago.
God.
It definitely dragged a bit. I mean, when we, the third location, right? It's like, oh, now we're going to Brazil.
Yeah.
Oh, man. There's a lot that didn't make sense. A lot that was problematic.
None of it made sense. The whole movie's problematic.
You know how I like the first sentence of every one of my notes, so like of these movies,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Today's first note was, I love Leslie Nielsen. He can't make me not laugh. And I think I might have to amend that after today. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm holding a mic in my hands, and now I'm talking all alone.
Thank you. where we break down the movies you're afraid to admit you love. I'm Zach Harper. That's Amin Al-Hassan. Anthony Mays pushing buttons. Podcast where we talk about bad movies that Amin, maybe we think don't get enough respect. But maybe this one got too much. This week's Cinephobe is the 1997 comedy Mr. Magoo. Stars comedy legend Leslie Nielsen. Also, you're going to see Kelly Lynch. You may remember her from Cocktail, from Roadhouse, from Virtuosity. Of course, Ernie Hudson, one of the Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Stop burying the lead. There's a very big star in this movie.
Do you mean the first major movie role for one Jennifer Garner?
Yes.
Yeah. Problematic. Yes. Problematic movie very role for Jennifer yes. Garner. Way to sure kick it off.
I'm sure she would rather we don't remember that yeah. she was in Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. Also, infamous old man bad guy Malcolm McDowell. He's in A Clockwork yes. Orange. Stephen Tobolowsky. He's Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day. Also been in a bunch of stuff. And Nick Chinland, who I love. He's Billy Bedlam in Con Air. He's the guy that needed to put the bunny yes. back in the box.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. The infamous fight in the hull of the plane between him and Nick Cage.
Yeah. Put the bunny back in the box.
So this one was directed by Stanley Tong. Stanley Tong directed a lot of Jackie Chan movies. Really? This is the first and only English language movie that Stanley Tong ever did. I mean,
lot that we can infer from that.
You're right. He got it right the first time, decided he didn't want to do it again. So this is...
What was the Rotten Tomato score on this?
7%.
That is quite the score, and yet somehow I am outraged.
Yeah, still seems way too high. Synopsis for Mr. Magoo. The myopic millionaire defeats jewel smugglers in his usual bumbling manner. The tagline, the eighth blunder of the world. How about that? $30 million budget. It grossed $21.3 million in the U.S. and totaled $28.8 million worldwide. Oh. So it lost money. Before we jump into this movie, you want to listen to the rest of the episode where obviously there are a bunch of spoilers. Mr. Magoo is available on HBO Go. The Rotten Tomatoes score, again, 7% from critics on 29 reviews. 24% from the audience on over 35,000 ratings.
Do you have any positive reviews? I'd like to hear what these people have to say.
Okay, I've got one positive and I got a bunch of negatives. You want the positive first?
Give me the positive first. Let's start on a good foot.
In 2008, Ken Fox of TV Guide, this is the positive. Instantly forgettable, but fun while it lasts. That's the nicest thing anyone had to say about this movie.
I just looked up the audience reviews and this one. A 5-star review from Tina C. Leslie Nielsen is Mr. Magoo in this movie. I grew up watching the cartoon. My kids and I were doubled over on multiple occasions. Leslie's delivery doesn't disappoint. And you'll find that in this awful movie, that last line right there is especially offensive.
So here are the bad reviews. Mike Clark of USA Today. The movie is an insult to the intelligence of the entire human race.
Yes.
Jonathan Rosenbaum of Chicago Reader. If you really hate your kids, pack them off to this slapdash farce whose only funny moment is the PC disclaimer at the end of the Disney company's humanist concern for blind people.
Oh, you gave it away. I was holding on to that.
We'll get to that in a bit. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times. Mr. Magoo is transcendently bad. It soars above ordinary badness as the eagle outreaches the fly. There is not a laugh in it, not one. Lawrence Van Gelder of the New York Times. Incomplete as a cartoon, indecisive as comedy, halting as adventure. Mr. Magoo turns out to be a short-sighted project. See what he did there? See, the short-sighted? Got vision problems. Susan Wolzisna of USA Today. If you ever wanted to know how awful a Jackie Chan movie would be without Jackie Chan, this is it. James Baraldino of Real Views. Mr. Magoo is not just an insult to the blind or near blind. It's an insult to every human being who has the misfortune to suffer through this dreadfully unfunny 90-minute atrocity. And then Jeff Weiss of the Deseret News. Among those who will be insulted by this painfully unfunny comedy are women, the elderly, and members of several ethnicities, as well as moviegoers with even the slightest modicum of taste.
When was that review?
January 1st of 2000. Yeah. It's pretty woke.
Yeah.
It's pretty woke. Amin, you picked this movie. Why? Simply because it's on HBO?
It's on HBO, and like I remember wanting to see it when it came out
okay.
and then hearing it was so bad.
Yeah, because you're right. Like, Leslie Nielsen has done nothing but made me laugh in childhood.
My first note on my notepad. I love Leslie Nielsen. He can't make me not laugh. Like every movie he's in, even he's been in bad movies.
Yeah.
But I still laughed like because his delivery is just so deadpan. And by the way, that's my favorite Leslie Nielsen fact. Up until Airplane, he was a dramatic actor.
Yeah.
He didn't start doing comedies until after Airplane, and he was cast in Airplane because he was a dramatic actor. They wanted someone extremely serious that the audience would look at as a very serious kind of grave person to deliver these ridiculous lines like,
can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
So, Airplane was really the movie that launched his turn into comedic acting, and that led to obviously the Naked Gun and the Airplane sequels and you know, was it Mafia? Was that another one that he did?
That sounds right to me. Yeah,
plays a mob boss. Everything else that came afterward came all from that one fateful role in Airplane. So. Yeah, I went into this and said, look, it's probably going to be a dumb movie, but I'm sure Leslie Nielsen will make me laugh because he's Leslie Nielsen.
And yet, it was a tough one. It was a tough one. I guess let's just dive right into it, right?
Sure.
My opening note, wait, is this a cartoon? What in the Kangaroo Jack 2 is happening? Because it opens with an animated credit roll.
This is how I thought Kangaroo Jack 2 was going to be, animated to start.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. And then it would transition to live action. And if you remember, Kangaroo Jack 2 just continued to be animated for the rest of the movie.
Right. So in this animated sequence of them giving the, you know, the credits and everything, I wrote, he just walked out of a window and what apparently didn't have any glass on it. So there's just an opening to fall to your death at this office building.
My notes were Quincy is his name. I thought that was a black name.
I've got a note later on in that asking if he's a Freddie Kitchens all-star.
Yes. Quincy Magoo does kind of lend towards a certain Freddie Freeman, Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah.
Grover Cleveland. Kendall,
yeah.
Khalil Green. Mm-hmm. It is all, they're all in the same club here.
Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah. Well.
Well, the DiVincenzo part, no, but Dante. Yeah.
It's white Dante.
Quincy. I don't know that I know a single white person named Quincy.
John Quincy Adams is the closest I can get.
That's not fair.
That's a stretch.
Though. Yeah, that's a stretch.
It's like in the 1700s and it's a middle name and everything.
I'm Googling white Quincy right now. And white someone named Quincy. Quincy White comes up.
Oh, nice.
Who is a black man.
Yeah, there you go. There you have it. I'm often like curious, not only like are there any white Quincy's, but also how did Quincy become a black name?
That's a good question.
When did the blacks say no, this would be ours? It's like, you know what it's like? It's like Jerome.
Oh yeah.
There's only two Jeromes I've ever known who are not black. One is Jerry Seinfeld, real name is Jerome Seinfeld. The other one is Jerome, Black Dragon Roll. I don't know Jerome's last name.
So the Quincy name origin. A Norman surname of old French origin.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
It just means fifth born in Latin.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of people misnumered out there, huh?
It's used in reference to toilets that's derived from President John Quincy Adams, who was the first to have one installed at the White House.
Yeah, go fuck yourself, Zach.
Wait, why is that a go fuck myself?
Yeah, you wanted to shit on John Quincy Adams' legacy.
I didn't want to shit on John Quincy Adams' legacy.
Yes, you did.
The only thing I know about him is he was Paul Giamatti.
He's shitting on you. No, that's John Adams.
That was his dad. That was dad.
John Quincy Adams not only shit on you, but then he flushed you in his brand new fucking toilet. How about that?
Wait a second. Wait a was like, who was John Quincy Adams? They had toilets back then?
No, not until him. They do now. That's what he's saying, right? In whatever 1790s or whatever. It's like, yeah, toilets like that. They do now, motherfucker. You're welcome.
He was in office from 1825 to 1829. Oh, they had toilets.
There you go. And he said, they do now, motherfucker. Hold on. Now we won't be able to flush for another month.
Yeah, so when he walks out the just open, not even window, just the opening in the building, in a business building, he lands on a construction beam, as is, you know, the Magoo specialty, walks into his own factory, and there's a bunch of eggplants. The workers don't appear to care that he's there. he gets in his car. He drives, which makes me wonder. So he works in the office building, but his car is parked in the factory? Does that seem right to you?
He's a man of the people, Zach.
I guess. He's driving back. He's obviously swerving all over the place. He's driving on train tracks. I wrote he's turned this into a poor man's version of Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, which is my favorite ride at Disneyland. My favorite thing to go on.
You have a very, very... very sad existence at Disneyland.
It's so fun. It's so fun. You know why? Because I like when you get to the court and the judge goes, guilty. I love that part. He drops the gavel and then he becomes the devil. It's a real, you know what I mean? It's a real look into our legal system.
I for one, like the rides where, I don't know, something actually happens.
All right. He knocks over a fire hydrant while driving, feels water, and that's where he says, El Nino's back.
Yeah. Also, I also have a note here that says, this nigga ain't old. I think he's illiterate. Because there's several times where he just like reads the sign incorrectly. I'm like, I don't think that's bad eyesight that's doing that. Yeah. I think that's someone who can't read.
And so I made a note that he almost exclusively says to himself constantly, oh, Magoo, you've done it again. But it's never clear what he's done.
There's a lot of that, man. There's a lot of him talking to himself.
Yeah. Like, I think he's insane.
Yes. They're like, the way he laughs the whole time. It's pretty awkward. Like, it's pretty awkward. Like, yeah. You saw someone doing that. I don't think you'd allow them to pass their driver's license test.
No, no, not at all. And so we get to the point where we get a little voiceover from a TV broadcast talking about museum, they call Mr. Magoo the Vegetable King. Did you know he's the Vegetable King? I didn't know that.
I did not know that either, but yeah. I guess that's a thing.
And as he pulls up to the event with all this, it's no longer animated. And he in the museum that I believe he's a part of is housing the treasures of Kuristan.
Yes.
And that's what I wrote. Maybe this whole thing should have been animated.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it looks bad.
Did you notice that the voiceover work on the animation was the original Magoo voice?
Yes.
And wasn't Leslie Nielsen?
Right, not Leslie Nielsen. And so my first note here is, fuck, Leslie Nielsen looks old.
He does.
I don't know if that was...
That's not makeup.
That's not makeup, right? That's just how he looked at that point.
That's 1997 Leslie Nielsen at work right there.
Oh, man. We get introduced to Kelly Lynch, who plays Luann. And I'm just referring to this guy as Billy Bedlam the whole time in my notes because it's just easier for me to do. I actually don't know his name in the movie, but Luann and Billy Bedlam are admiring a ruby, and Billy's got a jewelry for beginners book in his hands. And she says, oh, that's quite exquisite. And he tells her it's not exquisite and then names the minerals that make up a ruby.
Right.
And she has to explain to him that it's an adjective, not an element. The word exquisite. There
is a point in this movie. It's going to come in a little bit later, but I'm just going to drop this note right now. I put in, what the fuck is the point of this movie? Literally the beginning makes no sense. None of this, the way Zach just introduced characters or whatever is way clearer than it happens in the actual movie.
Yeah. Right? Like there is nothing... There's no through line in this whole movie.
Nope.
At all.
Nope. It's just a random sequence of events.
Here's some Magoo is blind or doesn't see well comedy. He eats, I don't know, an egg off of a woman's hat. thinking it's a caterer.
Oh, thank you, my dear.
So I think this is the only laugh that I gave in this movie, because this is the laugh that comes up. So we're introduced to Waldo Magoo, who is his nephew. And he says that Magoo's got to find a new eye doctor. And Magoo says he's going to stick with this guy because he's been going to him since he was a child. Waldo says he's like 2,000 years old. All of his other patients are dead. And Magoo responds, you can't hold that against him. I legitimately laughed. I thought that was a funny exchange.
My first laugh of the movie comes later.
Okay. So now we get Waldo has discovered Jennifer Garner, who plays Stacy Sampajoditra.
She plays an ethnic role, but the role's name is Stacy.
But she's given an ethnic last name,
And an ethnic accent.
She's from she comes from the Kuristani Foreign Office. I looked up because I was unfamiliar with Kuristani.
It's not a real place.
What? Well, Kurdistani is real. It's a region of Iraq. So if you add a Kurdistan. D in it,
yes. Kurdistan, yes.
Right. No. And I thought they were going for.
No, it's Kurdistan. It's a fictitious country, Zach.
But it's just one letter away from being a real place. I figured that they were going with that. Or just mispronouncing it, because they gave her I don't know what kind of accent, but she's either got to be Middle Eastern or Asian, right? At this point,
What did I say about her accent? The accent is killing me.
So I just wrote. I guess she's Iraqi.
Okay,
that's what I wrote.
So you went through this entire movie thinking it was Kurdistan.
Well, because I looked up, I was like, that sounds like a real place to me, but let me double check. So I typed it in, and it auto-corrected to Kurdistan. And so I looked, did some further research. It's a region of Iraq, right? So that's Kurdistan. What I thought. I thought she was trying to be Iraqi the whole time.
All right.
Is that far-fetched with the way this movie goes?
I guess not.
I don't think, yeah. Anyway, Waldo Magoo is smitten. Magoo says to invite her to the opera tomorrow night. And I wrote, I'm not sure what this accident is supposed to be, but it's offensive. Oh, and this is, yeah, this is where I noticed for the first time that Mr. Magoo's name is Quincy.
There you go.
So Quincy Magoo is now cutting the ribbon for the exhibit, except he can't see what he's cutting at. So he's wielding these giant scissors around. Everyone's freaking out. And then he cuts an electric wire. There's sparks flying, and he mentions indoor fireworks, and I wrote, the joke is because he can't see. He walks into a tomb in the exhibit, thinking it's a phone booth, sees a mummy and calls for assistance for the injured man in bandages. He accidentally gets locked into the tomb.
These are all way funnier with you saying it than me actually watching the movie.
Hours later, he's still in the tomb. Hours later. Luann and Billy Bedlam are on the roof, ready to break in to steal the ruby. We find out Billy's supposed to watch Luann because the guy who's hired them doesn't trust her. So after she gets down to the ruby, he decides to join her, except, Amin, he's such a klutz. He's a bumbling, you know, hired goon. And so he falls down onto this pterodactyl exhibit and then falls onto the brontosaurus, and I wrote he Flintstones his way down the brontosaurus and crashes through the ruby exhibit, and the alarms sound.
All right, so questions. One, did this movie come out before or after Mission Impossible?
Mission Impossible was 95?
Okay, so it was after Mission Impossible. So I there was a moment where I panicked and said, wait a second. Because, you know, she comes down, rappels down from the roof of the museum.
Yeah, 1 year after Mission Impossible.
So, could they have known? When would they?
Yeah, I think that's Impossible.
Let me put this way. There was a moment that has now since been disproved that I had a pang of, wait a second. Did Mission Impossible rip off the whole rappelling from the thing from Mr. Magoo? I was like, what if, right? I knew they were out around the same time, but I wasn't sure what was the order. But now you tell me Mission Impossible came out in 96. This came out in 97. They independently arrived at that thing at the same time.
Well, this came out. Mission Impossible came out in May of 96.
Right.
Mr. Magoo was Christmas Day 1997.
Oh,
this
no,
was a Christmas Day release.
Yeah, no, they definitely took their time with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Walt Disney Company, what were you thinking? Other observations. Jesus, how bad was their prop department? These dinosaurs supposed to be at a museum? They look like cartoon characters.
Yeah.
The dinosaurs had eyebrows and smiles, guys. Like, I mean, I can't stress enough how little these model dinosaurs or fake dinosaurs look like dinosaurs. They look like cartoons. They look like actual cartoons. And then when your boy Billy Bedlam slides down the Brontosaurus, it comes complete with the like cartoon style scoring. Remember, she said the guy who did the score must have come with the cartoon. Like, they must have got the original, like,
yeah.
It was done complete cartoon style.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So at this point, Magoo just leaves the tomb. So he was in there for hours with the ability to leave. That's what we've come to believe. As Billy's about to shoot Magoo in the back, security guard interrupts, tells him to drop the gun. Magoo walks out an emergency exit. The alarm sounds. Billy knocks out the guard. And they get away. Luann and Billy Bedlam get away. So now we go to a new scene. Waldo is cleaning up Magoo's car, and the license plate on Magoo's car says "The Goo." The space goo.
I said there's a lot of dick jokes for a kid's movie.
Because the next thing we see is a giant eggplant mobile that has a sign on it that says "Magoo's Eggplant That Moves You." This is the precursor to dick pics. That's what I've come up with. This movie is what, like, eventually initiated the eggplant emoji being a dick.
Yes.
And everything. Like, Magoo, like, and just throughout the movie, like, Mr. Magoo's just a hornball. He's just a horny old man. He is. There's no other way around it. And now we get to the other main character, which is Magoo's bulldog, who has an alarm clock. He pisses into a jar in the room that has a fire hydrant picture above it.
Yeah, this is where I said, this is how dog people think their dogs are.
It's wearing like a robe.
They think that like Mr. Magoo's dog, basically his whole job in life is to make Mr. Magoo look good. Like, he's about to walk into a fiery pit of lava. The dog comes and trips him, and he ends up walking into like a wonderful pool of cool water or whatever. Like, everything that's about to, every sort of like calamity that's about to beset Mr. Magoo, the dog is there to fix.
Right.
And so the way the dog like took a leak in like a what's supposed to be like a dog toilet.
I guess.
I was like, this is all the dog people think their dogs are like. Oh, my dog is really smart, and my dog knows better than us. Shut up.
We find out that he lays out the outfits for Quincy Magoo every morning.
Exactly. The dog, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, he's pulling vacuums out of the way so Magoo doesn't walk into him.
I have a note here that says, was that a rabbit wearing lingerie?
In the picture?
I think so,
No, it's
yes.
a poodle. It's like a small poodle, I think, or some still kind of poodle-like
wearing,
dog.
Still yes, wearing lingerie.
Wearing lingerie, yeah. That's a frame picture next to the dog's bed.
But why?
That's a great question, Amin. It's a great question. All right, now we're back in the museum. Ernie Hudson and Stephen Tobolowsky are
the
agents.
Guy from Memento. The guy from Memento is what I wrote. He's the guy from Memento, remember?
Is he?
You ever seen Memento?
Yeah.
He's the guy from Memento that when they're trying to explain to Guy Pierce, his condition, or is it Thomas Jane, whichever, they both look alike to me. And they're trying to explain the condition to him. They talk about this other dude whose wife brought him in for testing because he had anterior grade memory loss. And so they would tell him to pick up a block, remember?
Yeah,
one of the blocks was electrified. And he's like, ow! And he'd always cut you, motherfucker. And then he'd forget 5 minutes later, and then he'd pick up the same electrified block. That's the dude.
Okay, I've just always known him as Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day.
I was thinking about the guy from Memento, man.
Okay.
Also, one last thing. I put in the note. I can't tell the burglar from the nephew.
I
got very confused early in the movie between Billy Bedlam.
Oh, you thought it was an inside job?
Yeah, I was like, wait, what's going on here? But he just seems so bungling. I was like, it can't be the same guy.
So Ernie Hudson is a CIA agent, and Stephen Tobolowsky, the guy from Memento, Ned Ryerson, is an FBI agent. They're with the State Department. They're investigating the missing ruby. They want to put a fake in the exhibit so no one's aware that this has happened. And that causes, that means there's no press for it, and that causes, in a new scene, Billy Bedlam is paranoid that the crime wasn't in the papers, but we find out, thanks to Luann, he's reading yesterday's paper.
Good job.
Oh, clever. They're on a boat. Magoo is out fishing in the SS Magoo while applying toothpaste to sunscreen because, again, I mean, can't see.
Yes.
He's blind. Also, I wrote the note, how does he not have skin cancer?
From all the toothpaste.
His skin's never been brighter and more fluoride-free, but he's got skin cancer.
Oh, man.
All right. Luann wants to auction the ruby themselves to get all the money instead of giving it to the boss, where he'll auction it. While saying this, she's setting up to steal the ruby from Billy, who has possession of it.
This is my first laugh of the movie right here. When she's trying to seduce Billy into doing this, she says, I can take you places you've never been before. And he says, I've never been to Toronto.
That did it for you.
I did laugh at that moment.
Okay.
It was just ridiculous.
Okay.
And then my next note, I don't even know what I'm referencing here, was a lot of dick jokes for a kid's movie. A
lot of dick jokes, man.
Oh, my God.
So she tries to kick him off the boat. He grabs onto her. The ruby falls onto Magoo's head and falls into his tackle box.
By the way, the ruby looks like a ring pop. Again,
yeah,
pop to pop.
I mean, it is comically. What are we doing? Yeah, comically big.
Like, they spent $30 million on this movie. Clearly, none of it was spent on props.
Had to have been, what, a maximum of like $600 on props? I mean, it couldn't have been much.
Man, $600, you're really pushing it.
So he casts a line because he's fishing, and he hooks Billy right in the ass as he's holding on to Luann and trying not to fall off this boat.
This is a Christmas movie.
Billy drops in the water. Magoo reels in the pants off of Billy. Magoo boats away, and Billy swims after him. And Billy apparently is a great swimmer because he's just step in step with Magoo's boat the whole time. Magoo walks off the boat and onto one of those giant boat wheels, thinking it's an escalator. Yeah. I wrote some real wire work happening here on this scene.
Yes, I was pretty impressed.
Billy tries to do the same. He falls. He gets caught in the wheel. Now we get back, and the agents think Magoo is in on it, and he created the diversion to get the ruby stolen. The agents want to put him under surveillance, so they get Stacy from Kuristan to be in on the investigation, to lead them to Magoo. So now we get a shot of Malcolm McDowell. He is the bad guy who hired Luann and Billy Bedlam to steal the ruby. He's the boss. This guy named Peru, who they call the Piranha, who's the king of the underworld, might show up to this auction. So now we know where this ruby is supposed to go. Stacy shows up to Magoo's house to pick him up for the opera. She cites a cultural reason for some reason. Magoo says to show her the garden because it's intimate. So Magoo's just trying to get everybody to fuck.
He tells her to come to the opera, right?
Well, Magoo told Waldo in front of her to come to the opera.
But then I wrote down in my notes, why is Magoo in an opera?
There's no through line in this entire movie.
Like, they just, like, it was like they walked in every day and say, all right, give us some ideas. What if Magoo was in an opera? Like, good idea, good start. And they just improv'd everything from there.
Right. Poorly. So Magoo's trying to get him to fuck in the garden, I guess. I don't know. I wrote, the dog is constantly moving obstacles out of Magoo's way. He knocks over the tackle box, revealing the ruby. The dog brings the ruby to Magoo.
Yes.
And he throws it outside to play fetch. He gets stuck in this this rabbit-shaped hedge.
Yes.
Where they were just looking. They just missed it. As she's trying to search for the ruby. Oh, the timing, I mean.
The dog tries to get it from the hedge, where the ruby landed right between the fictitious rabbit's legs. So I said, oh, look, the dog is eating the rabbit's nuts. Again, big joke. Like, I don't know.
And it's just a bunch of vignettes, really, that, like, the scenes don't go together.
But then none of them are funny.
Right. Right. We have a combined two laughs from this movie so far, and there's separate points.
And they're all like real, like again, really like risque humor for a Disney children's movie that's coming out on Christmas.
Yes.
Like I can't think of
it. Yeah.
Jeez.
At the opera. Now we're at the opera. The agents are fucking around with each other. Apparently Magoo's gonna sing at the opera. That's where we find out he's a singer. Luann goes there in disguise as a reporter. I wrote, she looks like a hotter Nicole Kidman. Because by the way, like Kelly Lynch, man, she was still bringing it in 1997.
I can't remember whether it was Luann or was it Stacey, but one of them says, well, how do I look? And my answer was like 1997.
That was Stacey. That's later on. Magoo wants to go to the beach with her the next day, so they get a private interview. I wrote, once again, Magoo is a horn dog. There's a bunch of like slapstick hijinks happening at the opera. He's accidentally, like, he's got this like fake sledgehammer. He's a Viking, right? And he's knocking out the one agent. He's knocking out Billy Bedlam, who's trying to kill him. A giant fan gets turned on and starts blowing stuff all over the place. He catapults an agent across the stage. I mean, is any of this stuff interesting? Like, did you even, like, no. I didn't smile at any of this.
I don't even have a note on it.
There you go. Yeah.
My next note is Memento in brown face.
Oh, all right. Hold on. You got a little bit. So now we're at the beach with the interview. The agent's stalking them. Luann thinks that he has the ruby on, so she's like trying to make advances. She's like searching all over him. He thinks she wants to fuck. She wants to get him on the boat. Magoo, you've done it again. Magoo, you fucked again. Like, I don't, maybe that's what he means when he says you've done it again. I don't know. She uses a dead fish to kiss him when he wants a kiss.
And Magoo's doing so much fucking, he can't tell that that's not the lips of a human alive woman rather than a dead cold fish.
I wrote a note. We've all been there, fellas. Maybe not. Maybe that's just me. The agent has looked up Luann in the system. She's called the Black Widow because all these men she's with dies. Luann's going through his shit on the boat. She finds a tackle box. She finds out the tackle box is back home, wants to go there. So she fakes a sprained ankle and gets Magoo to agree to take her to his house. Again, he just thinks she wants to fuck.
Can you blame him?
This is where we find your 1997 comment. Stacy. Well, so I wrote, so for all these things, I think she's supposed to be an Iraqi woman. Because I wrote, Stacy, the Iraqi woman, is dressed in a skirt and crop top on her date with Waldo. he tries to kiss her. She says they mustn't. She confesses to Waldo about the agents investigating Magoo, wants to help Magoo, wants to figure things out. And this is where we get to, we're back at Magoo's home. The FBI agent, I wrote, the FBI agent is dressed racistly as he tries to get into Magoo's home.
But I'm just saying, like, there's no pretense.
No, there's no understanding.
Like, here, let me explain it to you. If one were trying to sneak into Magoo's home, why would being Indian help you?
Right. Yeah. He's in like a turban, right? He's in brown face.
But I just don't understand why that's the solution, to sneak in somewhere.
Right. It's not like he's questioned him yet, right?
He doesn't even know what he looks like. Yeah. He can walk over.
Yeah, there's just no reason for it. At the same time, Billy Bedlam's trying to get in. He unknowingly passes the ruby in the hedge. I just have these notes over and over. Why was brownface in the disguise necessary?
I said, is Memento in brownface? Then later on, update, it is brownface.
Yeah.
But why? Other note that's embedded in here is, I underestimated how annoying the constant chuckling would be.
From Magoo?
Yeah. Like, it really wears on you.
It's a lot. So Magoo returns with Luann. But I did write this. The racist agent just hung himself up inside a coat on a coat rack. It's the most athletic thing I've seen in a movie. That was actually impressive.
Yeah, I don't think that was actually real.
Well, I don't know, but he puts the coat on, and then he just puts the coat on the coat rack, and he tucks up into it.
Yeah.
I thought it was clever at worst.
Okay.
Luann spots the tackle box in the in the closet. She asks Magoo to cook something for her to get him out of there. Magoo goes cooking with an instructional video. He's setting off the bugs that the agent has placed in there left and right. The dog gets the ruby out of the hedge. He brings it in. He accidentally changes the TV to a workout video. But Magoo can't see Amin, so he just thinks that these instructions in the workout video are the cooking instructions.
Yes.
He throws the ruby outside again to play fetch. He's working the legs back and forth. It's changed to a construction video. He gets sandpaper out to sand down the turkey or the chicken or whatever the fuck it is. I wrote again, why is the agent in brown face?
There was that nice line on his bald forehead, though, between his brown face and his white head.
That's the point where it really hammers home that he is, in fact, in brown face.
Yeah, that's what confirmed it for me.
All right. Waldo thinks Magoo is confessing to stealing the ruby when he's just talking about trying to fuck Luann. Magoo wants him to meet Luann. Magoo thinks she's going to propose, but she pulls out a gun on him.
Is Donald Sterling Mr. Magoo?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really good question.
Just think about with all the Sterling stuff in the news right now. I'm like, yeah, that's...
So the dog brings the ruby. Magoo throws it again, thinking the dog wants to play fetch. Lands next to a chimney. Billy falls out of the chimney and grabs it and runs. Waldo tackles Luann. She claims to be FBI. Now the agents converge on Billy, and he takes the car that's got this it's just, I guess, a bifocal windshield.
Yes.
So he can't to help Magoo drive.
Yes, that's
but Magoo's but obviously car. He can't see it. And that's when I write in all caps with the egg or with an exclamation point, the eggplant mobile.
Chekhov's eggplant mobile.
My next note: Fast and Furious Tokyo Dick.
That's pretty good, man.
Thanks, man. I was pretty proud of that. Billy gets away. Luann tells Magoo about the auction and the piranha. So now Magoo's going to pretend to be. So in the eggplant mobile, as they're driving, for some reason they drive off a ledge and there's a suspended giant tunnel cylinder that the eggplant drives into. It's sexual. Again, children's movie released on Christmas Day. There's a dick going into a hole for no reason.
So you know, like those big pipes I'm talking about, like the pipe is the size of a room, right? And so it's a construction site.
It's like an aqueduct pipe, essentially, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a construction site, and one of these things is like on a sling, and they're trying to lay it into place. And as it's like floating down slowly, the eggplant mobile jumps off the cliff. And just the timing is perfect to it lands right into the hole.
I mean, he fucks the construction site.
I love the obvious cutaway to the model eggplant that they had to, because they, you know, they cut that together from like four different shots, but just the obvious tiny model size one.
Magoo is such a horny old man that he fucks a construction site in a kid's movie on Christmas Day.
Or at least by the Walt Disney Company. They can't stress that enough.
All right, Billy gets away. Luann tells Magoo about the auction, blah, blah, blah. So now Magoo's going to pretend to be the piranha.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
To try to get the ruby from Billy and the rest of the goons. He dresses, I guess, racistly, right? He's supposed to be a Mexican? A Brazilian?
Later on, we find out he's Brazilian, although I don't think they know much about this. The filmmaker, I don't think they knew much about the country of Brazil.
No, because he's speaking Spanish.
Yes, everyone speaks Spanish. When the movie gets to Brazil, it's like, wait a sec, why is everyone speaking Spanish? And I realize, they don't know.
No, they have no idea that's a Portuguese country.
Yes.
All right, Magoo's pretending to be the piranha. Luann steals the snowmobile from Waldo. The agents and Stacy are in pursuit. My next note, there are 35 fucking minutes left in this movie.
There's a line here where it said, this is a job for professionals. And someone responds, then why are the two of you going? And I said, oh, snap.
So the hitmen are in this locker room before the auction. They're showing off tattoos. They want to see the piranha's tattoos. And in a very short amount of time, for a man whose sight is so bad that he is in calamity after calamity, he draws one of the most intricate things I've ever seen. It's a frog with a cigar and guns. He draws it on his own chest. It's very impressive art for anybody, let alone a blind man.
Yes, it is.
This is after Malcolm McDowell brings out a rainbow assortment of hookers.
Oh, that's right.
And Magoo, I actually really like this line. As Peru, he says, "I was going to kill someone this morning, but I did it last night so I could be here."
Yeah.
And for some reason, they're having this auction in a pool? In like a bathhouse, a hot tub, yeah.
So it's like a large hot tub, like a hot tub the size of a swimming pool.
Yeah.
And Malcolm McDowell's sitting over there on a giant stone-carved bear's mouth on hydraulics.
Yeah. 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 I mean, what? For why? Why?
Oh, yeah. That's the point where when they're leading them out there and he goes the wrong way and they say, "Mr. Peru, it's this way." And he just looks at them and he yells, "There are no signs." I laughed at that too. I don't know. It's just the way he said, "There are no signs."
Okay.
Reminded me of my dad.
He sits in the water, and of course he dips down at one point enough to where now the tattoo is running. Right? And tattoos don't run, so that's the tricky part. McDowell presents the ruby for everybody to bid on. Magoo says he wants to see it. He gets it in his grasp. McDowell figures out it's Magoo by looking at a picture of him in the paper and drawing hair on the picture in black ink.
Yeah. I also know.
Billy comes and tries to get him. Luann saves him from Billy. Waldo tries to tell Magoo she's not in the FBI. She gets away as, once again, agents converge at the last minute. She leaves on a snowmobile, and Magoo pursues on an ironing board that he's snowboarding on, I guess.
Can you snowboard on an ironing board is what I wrote in my notes.
It's a great question.
And then I thought it was very funny that as he snowboards, he, of course, in true Magoo fashion, inadvertently enters a snowboard race.
Yes, yeah, there's a snowboarding competition.
Yes, and two of the sponsors of this snowboard race are Compaq and Nortel. And I was just like, wow.
That is really on the nose.
Yeah, 1997, you've never been more 97 in your life.
Yeah, so through, you know, just sheer dumb luck, he's knocking out of these competitors left and right in the snowboarding competition. He's making it into a random tunnel that's there for some reason, I don't really understand. I did laugh again because he wins the competition. He crosses the finish line first, and the announcer says, "And the winner of the quarter cross women's final is a man on an ironing board." For some reason, that made me laugh, the delivery of it.
I missed that part.
As everyone else is in pursuit, Billy is frozen completely on the hill. Everybody falls off this cliff. I don't know, man. Luann calls the real piranha, and she's dressed like Mrs. Doubtfire to arrange a deal between the two of them to get the ruby. Waldo's trying to track her down. Magoo's dog attacks her, and she runs away, and they find her airline receipt. And that's when I wrote, "This movie is so old. Remember those days having your ticket before you got to the airport?"
Yep.
They're going to Brazil to get her and to get the ruby. Then I wrote, "There's 20 minutes left, and for some reason, Waldo has a tarantula on him." I'm not sure why that gag was needed, because all it is he has a tarantula on his vest, and Magoo says, "Nice badge."
Well, that's why they needed that gag.
There's a lot of scenes where we just cut into a moment with no buildup or context, like the tarantula moment. And yeah, it's just like,
it makes me think that there's like 45 minutes on the cutting floor that would have tied a lot of shit together.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
Why does Brazil look like the Hollywood Hills?
Oh, it really does. It really does.
Actual Mr. Peru's house does not look like it's in Brazil at all. It looks like it's.
Yeah.
It's right. It's right.
That's,
here.
And that's when they do the whole terrible Abbott and Costello routine.
This receipt is for Brazil. Why would she go to Brazil?
She's going to Peru.
She'd go to Brazil to go to Peru?
Exactly.
But why?
To get more for the ruby.
Peru?
Exactly.
But then why go to Brazil?
Peru is in Brazil.
Peru is in Brazil.
Ortega Peru is in Brazil.
Ortega Peru, of course.
And that's why we're going to Brazil.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
LOL at the B-roll of the Jesus statue. Like, it was just so clearly, like, they just, like, if YouTube was around, they would have just scraped it off of YouTube.
Right.
They didn't even bother.
Peru, the Piranha makes a Euro Disney reference, and I wrote this movie so old.
Shameless plug.
Oh, right. Shameless plug. Disney Corporation. That's smart. They encounter a chained up baboon on a swing.
It's a mandrill.
Oh, it's a mandrill.
Where Matt gets mad at me for correcting animal nomenclature again.
Yeah, that's fine. Wait, who got mad at you before? Did I do that?
No, it's when I called it Pteranodon in Land of the Lost. You guys got upset. Yeah. And then right when they see it, a Pteranodon comes down, picks it up, and flies away.
Right. Look at this nerd. Everyone else says it's a pterodactyl. It's one of the flying ones. You got to call it something else. What'd you call it?
I wrote down pterodactyl.
Pteranodon.
Yeah. What's the difference?
Dude, I don't know. It's not like I'm recognizing these dinosaurs. It's just like, this is what's in the description of the movie.
You're like the kid from Jurassic Park.
Excuse me. I mean, no, that's actually a pteranodon. You can tell by the plumage.
I was like, when did Kevin Durant show up?
All right, he comes a mandrill on a swing. It's chained up, and Magoo says, "Ugliest child I've ever seen." you see, guys, he doesn't see this
guy in the monkey suit, man.
Yeah, it's just a guy in a monkey suit, a mandrill suit, and it chases them. I don't know.
I didn't get the point of that. Why is everyone speaking Spanish? Is another question.
Yeah,
they speak super hard.
There's a part where I say, holy green screen. And I can't remember what scene it was, but I just remember
it's
green
gotta be
scene.
The waterfall, right?
Yeah.
It's gotta be the waterfall. Yeah. We've got a lot of shit now. Before we get to that. Yeah. So Luann and Peru exchange the ruby for cash, which is hidden in this guy's clothes. This guy's wearing a comically large amount of clothes, and apparently there's just money taped to all of it.
Did you see that they were $1,000 bills?
No, were they?
Yes. They were, yeah.
God. Are those don't exist, right?
No, no such thing as $1,000.
No.
And there are definitely not that many of them if there are.
Right. Magoo falls into the mansion into a bubble bath for the bride. When she sees him covered in bubbles, she faints. And so Luann is taking down Brazilian assassins who are now trying to kill her. Peru double crossed her. Magoo comes out dressed as the bride and has the veil covering. Piranha gives Magoo the ruby, thinking it's his bride, right before the ceremony. I say Magoo takes it, says some Spanish for some reason, and then runs out. And then my note is, why does Magoo have fake tits, and how did he get fake tits in such a short amount of time?
It's working.
I guess.
Yeah, we're not going to dive too deep into the how the wedding dress fit him either.
Yeah, that's also a great question because they're definitely not the same size person. Magoo has to save Waldo. Piranha gets the ruby back as the feds converge yet again. Luann steals a helicopter that Peru was supposed to take. Magoo gets in too. Magoo grabs the ruby inside the chopper as it gets shot up from the inside. Magoo falls into the ocean. Luann jumps in after him. And then, you know, a rescue service drops a raft. Magoo is supposed to hook up the raft so the helicopter can drag them back to safety. And he instead hooks her up to it so she's safe, but he's now in a raft. And this is where the green screen work is not ideal. And this is where I wrote the note. And you assholes want to give me shit about the knowing CGI.
Yeah, no, this was particularly really...
Somehow the raft becomes a parachute. I mean,
yeah.
When he falls off the waterfall, he flips it upside down. He's holding onto it, and it's just floating.
And it floats down. And then he just floats down. Yep.
Yeah, he floats to safety. Lands on another raft.
Poppins.
Yeah, Mary Poppins, and then says again, "Magoo, you've done it again." Has he done this before?
That's just his cartoon catchphrase. He always comes out clean.
But it's gotta have context. It's gotta work.
Do Magoo, you've done it again.
The feds arrest Luann. They replace the real Ruby into the exhibit. Magoo signs a book that the feds wrote about this whole thing. Right?
There's a TV movie coming out.
It's a TV movie coming out. And now we're back to a cartoon.
There's a line that we skipped.
What?
I remember. Maybe it's after they tell Luann she's going to jail or something, but someone tells someone else, they make great loaf de meat. I laughed at that.
Okay. Wow. That's all that took.
She pretends to be French, and I think Ernie Hudson yells at her that they make good loaf de meat in prison.
Okay. Yeah. So it turns back into a cartoon. He walks up the dinosaur and he says, "Oh, Magoo, you dog." And I wrote, once again, he's a hornball. And then this is my favorite sequence in film history. So I'll give it this. There's a disclaimer before the credits.
Yep.
The disclaimer reads, "The preceding film is not intended as an accurate portrayal of blindness or poor eyesight. Blindness or poor eyesight does not imply an impairment of one's ability to be employed in a wide range of jobs, raise a family, perform important civic duties, or engage in a well-rounded life. All people with disabilities deserve a fair chance to live and work without being impeded by prejudice." It's not just that they put that in, guys. It's that then the exact next thing they do is they go to a fucking blooper reel.
To which I said, even the outtakes aren't funny.
The outtakes weren't funny at all.
They weren't funny. Like, I know you guys are thinking that we're just being harsh.
No, please watch this movie if you haven't. It's not funny.
The outtakes are not. No, the outtakes are not like. Right. You know how hard it is to have unfunny outtakes?
I've always laughed at outtakes and blooper reels because at some point you get everyone laughing at each other for not being able to do so. And for whatever reason, that always gets me when they crack up so much that they break. Right. That always gets me. It didn't get me here. And my last note. Seriously, why was that agent in brown face?
Yeah, so that's my favorite thing about the disclaimer. It's like in a movie where you got a guy in brown face, in a movie where you cast Jennifer Garner as someone ethnic and give her a terrible accent, in a movie with more dick jokes and sexual innuendos than I could shake a stick at, right? On a Disney children's movie released during Christmas. At the end of this, the filmmakers are like, guys, this is way too offensive. Got to have a disclaimer out there. Blind people aren't really that blind. Like, that's the part that they felt compelled to apologize about. None of this other shit.
Yeah, do blind people have an incredibly strong union we don't know about?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, Maze.
Wow.
So, the film was rushed to video because it was pulled from theaters after 2 weeks due to insulting blind people and nearsighted people.
Wow.
By the way, there's a note in the trivia that, contrary to popular belief, Mr. Magoo is severely nearsighted. He's not blind. So, the film was rushed to video due to bad reviews and protests by blind people and their advocates at theaters across the U.S. Wow. Disney attempted to deflect it by including that disclaimer at the end that argued the film was not intended as an accurate portrayal of visually impaired, which Roger Ebert sarcastically proclaimed was the only funny moment in the whole movie. The British Federation of the Blind petitioned the British Board of Film Classification to ban the movie in the UK, claiming it would bring ridicule upon blind and partially sighted people. Was this the most controversial movie of the 90s?
I got one question, though. How did they know?
I think word just got around.
Oh my god. Oh my god, this is amazing.
And that's the whole movie.
This is also a couple of other trivia pieces. One is, judging from unused footage in the trailer and behind the scenes specials, the opening animated sequence was also shot in live action, but never used. And then the
what?
Other
what?
Yes. Remember the animated part?
Yes.
They shot it in live action.
Why didn't you use that?
I don't know. And the other one, in the early 90s, the movie was in development at Amblin Entertainment with Danny DeVito.
He doesn't look anything like Mr. Magoo.
He doesn't sound. I mean, I'm just trying to think of Mr. Magoo.
Normally, this is the portion of the podcast where we go to a Tony Medley review. What? This movie was done in 1997. There is no Tony Medley review. I even searched. There is no mention of this movie in any of the reviews of Tony Medley. So, I've got an alternative for you guys.
What do you got?
Apparently, he gives out his Academy Award picks.
Oh, boy.
I've got the 2004 Academy Award picks from TonyMedley.com.
Okay.
So in it, he's got the disclaimer, the recent Academy Awards not only confirmed my opinion that 2003 was one of the weakest years in movie history, it explains why. The people who made the terrible films, then nominated, then give themselves the awards. Talk about incestuous. With these people in charge and patting themselves on the back for their mediocre work, what chance do we have for improvement? Even so, there were some highlights in filmdom in 2003. Here's how I would have voted for the major award. So I just want you to keep that in mind, okay? He thinks it's so incestuous that it ruined the Academy Awards for the 2003 films that were given out in 2004. And this is how he would have gone. So for Best Supporting Actress, the actual winner that year was Renee Zellweger for Cold Mountain. He did pick her for Cold Mountain. He said the only good thing in an overrated movie. His runner-up, Lindsay Lohan for Freaky Friday.
Oh. She played two roles, Deck.
Best Supporting Actor, he gave it to Peter Sarsgaard for Shattered Glass, as his performance still has me saying, wow. The actual winner that year was Tim Robbins for Mystic River. Peter Sarsgaard was not nominated, just so you know. Best Actress, the winner that year, Charlize Theron for Monster.
Okay.
His winner was not nominated. His winner
was
Jamie Lee Curtis for Freaky Friday.
This guy really liked Freaky Friday.
Best Actor was given to Sean Penn for Mystic River that year.
Right.
His nomination was not acted. His winner was not nominated. His winner would have gone to Colin Farrell for Phone Booth.
Oh, wow.
Nobody else was even close. He single-handedly made an improbable premise plausible and tense. Unlike the winner, Farrell was actually called upon to act. Best picture that year.
I like when he injects his personality.
Me too. I love it. The winner for Best Picture that year and the winner for Best Director, Peter Jackson for Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. His winner was not nominated. Can you guess what his winner would have been that year?
Freaky Friday.
And his best director pick was Mark Waters for Freaky Friday.
Jesus, Freaky Friday sweep.
Yo, how many times did he beat off to Freaky Friday? That's all I want to do.
10 out of 10. And all we need is the opening paragraph here. There is a reason for everything. If you withstand and accept the bad and relax, good will come. That's what happened to me today. I now understand why I've had to sit through all the truly awful movies I've seen this summer. The Almighty was preparing me for Freaky Friday.
While fighting with each other in a Chinese restaurant, the hostess gives them a fortune cookie with the same fortune in it. Almost simultaneously, everything shakes like an earthquake, and when it's all over, Tess and Anna have swapped bodies and the fun begins. I laughed until literally tears came to my eyes. Curtis and Lohan are spectacular. Their expert acting makes this implausible movie work. Both should be Oscar nominees, but despite Sir Donald Wolfit's deathbed utterance, dying is easy, comedy is hard, it'll never happen because comedy is rarely rewarded. Regardless, make no mistake, you will rarely see better acting. I just want you to know, remember, that this guy shits on Will Ferrell every chance he gets.
And Freaky Friday was his Oscar pick.
His Oscar pick.
His Oscar pick.
Oscar winner, best director, best supporting actress, best actress. And Colin Farrell for Phone Booth.
Only because there's no male lead in Freaky Friday.
Yeah. So, guys, here's time for the verdict. Is it a phobe or is it a file? Amin?
Oh, yeah, man. I got to go with heavy file on this.
File?
Yeah, I mean, heavy phobe. Oh.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I have to agree. I have to go phobe as well, but I do want to give it up for Angus the dog, or the dog that played Angus the dog. That was the MVP of this movie.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it was certainly the best acting in the movie, right?
He probably went back to his trailer and was like, God, I can't believe I have to work this.
I can't believe I'm going to piss in this jar again. It's a, I mean, it's a faux. It's not funny. It's a comedy that's not funny. It's got a dickmobile in it. It was released on Christmas Day by the Walt Disney Corporation. And it's woefully offensive in so many ways.
Oh, I mean, just like and the thing they apologized for was
not any of like the racism or anything.
And they only apologized after like the movie almost got banned.
Yeah. It's and yeah, 7% is 7% offensive.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out who the 7% are.
Well, so it's the so it only had what 20? Where was it? It has 29 reviews, and two of those are positive, I believe.
Who are the two positives?
So I gave you the one Ken Fox from 2008, yeah. Instantly forgettable but fun while it lasts, and then Brian Costello from Common Sense Media in 2017, silly live action 90s remake of cartoon pratfalls abound.
All right, that's not really a positive review.
Yeah, and he gave it like a 3 out of 5, which technically positive. But
that is positive. Why would he give it 3?
Let me see if there's. All right, hold on. It doesn't say it. It doesn't even have a link to the review.
Jesus Christ!
I'm looking at what else this guy. This guy gave The Net a 3 out of 5. The Net is way better than this movie. Thomas Crown Affair in 1968. He gave it 3 out of 5.
He thinks Thomas Crown Affair is the same quality movie as Mr. Magoo.
Yeah. Yeah. Hold the fuck on. This guy gave Hobbs and Shaw a 3 out of 5. Are you kidding me?
Wait, is that high or low?
One, it's low. Two, you think it's the same movie as Mr. Magoo?
A lot of people
you
don't like that
movie. You son of a bitch. yourself. Who is this guy? Brian Costello? Oh, go fuck yourself. Oh. Common Sense Media, my ass. I'm done. Yeah. Don't watch this movie. Thanks for being a Patreon subscriber. Tell your friends. That legitimately ruined my day.